Lucky Land Slots, you can get lucky just about anywhere.
Dearly beloved, we are gathered here today to... Has anyone seen the bride and groom?
Sorry, sorry, we're here. We were getting lucky in the limo and we lost track of time.
No, Lucky Land Casino, with cash prizes that add up quicker than a guest registry.
In that case, I pronounce you lucky.
Play for free at LuckyLandSlots.com. Daily bonuses are waiting. No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus. Terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
Lucky Land Casino, asking people, what's the weirdest place you've gotten lucky?
Lucky? In line at the deli, I guess?
Aha, in my dentist's office. More than once, actually.
Do I have to say?
Yes, you do.
In the car, before my kids' PTA meeting.
Really?
Yes.
Excuse me, what's the weirdest place you've gotten lucky?
I never win and tell.
Well, there you have it. You can get lucky anywhere, playing at LuckyLandSlots.com. Play for free right now. Are you feeling lucky? No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus. Terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
Hello, Kool-Aids, and welcome to Barca Talk. I'm your host, Remy Dixon. With me is Craig McGuff, and we're going to be discussing the Clasico today, everybody. It happened. It happened yesterday.
It did happen. Factually correct.
Yeah. I mean, but before we jump into that, we will say wins, losses, draws. Just always better with a group of Barca fans to talk through, to help support, to help ease your worries, fears, sadnesses. So highly suggest that you join us in our Patreon group. Lovely group of people, international, diverse, opinions at all times. It's a great place to be, especially after situations like this.
I agree. I think the more the merrier, as they say. Some more opinions are always good. As you say, there are many opinions. But join in. I think especially after games like yesterday, where so much polemica, so much excitement, as we'll talk about, living that yourself, there's a better way, and it's living it with others. So sometimes it's a therapy couch you need. Sometimes it's a stool at the proverbial bar to celebrate, but get involved.
Absolutely. So consider joining the Patreon group, $5 a month, and you get access to all of us, all of our opinions, all of our highs and lows.
Step into the world of power, loyalty, and luck.
I'm going to make him an offer he can't refuse.
With family, cannolis, and spins mean everything.
Now, you want to get mixed up in the family business.
Introducing The Godfather at ChumbaCasino.com. Test your luck in the shadowy world of the Godfather slot.
Someday, I will call upon you to do a service for me.
Play the Godfather, now at ChumbaCasino.com.
Welcome to the family.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus. Terms and conditions apply.
Judy was boring.
Hello.
Then, Judy discovered ChumbaCasino.com.
It's my little escape.
Now, Judy's the life of the party.
Oh, baby, mama's bringing home the bacon.
Whoa, take it easy, Judy. The Chumba life is for everybody. So go to ChumbaCasino.com and play over 100 casino-style games. Join today and play for free for your chance to redeem some serious prizes. Ch-ch-chumba. ChumbaCasino.com. No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
Hello, it is Ryan, and I was on a flight the other day playing one of my favorite social spin slot games on ChumbaCasino.com. I looked over at the person sitting next to me, and you know what they were doing? They were also playing Chumba Casino. Coincidence? I think not. Everybody's loving having fun with it. Chumba Casino is home to hundreds of casino-style games that you can play for free anytime, anywhere, even at 30,000 feet. So sign up now at ChumbaCasino.com to claim your free welcome bonus. That's ChumbaCasino.com and live the Chumba life.
No purchase necessary. VGW. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 18 plus.
Jumping right in, Craig. You know, the question that I felt like everybody kept asking before the game yesterday was like, how do you feel? Like, my short answer to that was going into the game was one of the weirdest run-ups to a Clasico in a while. Like, it felt very weird for me. And I'm just wondering, like, how did it feel for you?
Before the game?
Mm-hmm.
Before the game, if I'm honest, I was incredibly nervous that we would take an absolute hiding. I kind of felt that that the season, the narrative of the season is a very weird one. And I think Xavi's tenure is probably already defined by a couple of things. I've got no doubt we'll discuss one of them a bit later. But the one thing that he hasn't had this season is a real doing of epic proportions. And so I think people will carry a narrative about him in the short term, which I think will change, that, you know, he was borderline a failure this year, which I'm not sure I quite agree with. But the one thing he's got away with is a complete and utter just embarrassment on any level. I don't think PSG was that. So, long story long, I thought we were due an absolute hiding. I thought Madrid would ride their wave. And even though they'd be potentially tired, I thought they would come and be backed by their crowd. And I thought they would maybe put four or five past us, if I'm being brutally honest.
Yeah, but, you say that, and that feels to me like the Xavi era. Like, or especially this season, I guess, it's that there were so many people that were like, I think we could really get it this time, you know, like that we, not to say the Barca of old, because that's a completely different team and all the different situations there, but you should have more confidence in the manager and the team. We like, there were a lot of people like, oh, I could see a narrow win or narrow loss. Me personally, it's the same thing I've said before in other big games. I could see us pulling off something. I could see us getting absolutely destroyed. I could see it being a very even affair. This team is capable of all those things, and it really just depends on what happens on the day in ways that almost feel like it almost feels like we don't control it as much as there are times where you think, well, if the other team shows up and they have a good day, we might be done in. But then there are days where you're like, but at the same time, this team, like the first PSG game, right? This team is good enough to win and to do well on any given day and time. So I do think the fact that there's still the thought that we could potentially get 8-2'd or something like that on any given day is an issue. Like,
yeah, and I think there's a touch of the Man United about it for me. And I think people might think, you know, I'm being incredibly negative by saying I thought we would take a real doing yesterday. But there's a touch of the Man United about it, which says if you can't root yourself back to a system, you can't root yourself back to a manager who you have confidence in to manage themselves, never mind manage the game and manage the team. Mm-hmm. And you're relying on kids effectively, then I just think there's certain grounds you go to and you play against where you think, you know, maybe it's an element of doom mongering potentially, but just an element of realism that says if Madrid come out and do what they can do, like we could take a complete hiding here and it would be largely no fault of the core group of the squad that we found ourselves in. And I think to talk about the game, if you don't mind, just kind of move it on, because it's just logically where my next thought process is going. I think the game itself was actually a really, really good encapsulation of the season for both teams, to be mm-hmm. honest, which is I think we saw very much what both teams are and have been, good and bad, for both teams. And I actually think on balance, it wasn't only a fair result of the game, because I felt it was, and obviously people will disagree about, you know, certainly one big call, maybe the penalties that were and weren't as well. But I think on balance, I thought it was a fair result. And I think it's probably a fair result of the season in general, to be honest, in terms of what's between the teams, mm-hmm. both the personnel that were on the pitch and also those off it. So to me, it's not one of those classical defeats that I come away with and it hurts, or I have serious doubts or serious questions or anything like that. It's weirdly for me, it's one I come away with and I think, yeah, fair enough. That's probably, it's probably bang on the money on multiple fronts, including how La Liga is organized and ran, how Barca is right now and how Madrid is right now, and what all three elements need to do in the future to improve their own constituent parts of that conversation. So it was weirdly sensible for me yesterday, if that's not too weird of a word. What's your overriding assessment before we get into it in detail? Just your overriding kind of full-time whistle goes, what are you thinking?
I think you're really bang on that one. I feel it's one of those things where you think like lineup seemed good, We started out, we were the Mania Mall is going at them, and I think the parts, once the game starts wearing on, you have Kamavinga on a yellow. Towards end of the game, Yamal isn't really attacking him as much as he was before. I don't know if that was tired, but like, I don't know what it was, but I felt like that for me was one of those things where in my head I'm going, well, Xavi should be pulling Yamal over and saying, hey, go at Kamavinga. You can get him out of this game. You're absolutely taking him out. You can get him out of this game if you keep going at him. And the fact that it felt like that we didn't do that, it felt like we were on the front foot and then just took our foot off the gas and completely changed how we play towards the end. I think that's the over, regardless of all the different pieces and points. I saw a game like I've seen many other games that we start out well, and if we exploit certain things that are going well, we could finish out winning. But we don't, and we end up losing. So overall, like, I think it's a fair assessment. I think this was a good reflection of the team, the season, La Liga, Real Madrid, all of it.
Completely, and I think that in itself is probably the most intriguing bit of this for me, which is that element of kind of how much reliance is put not just only on youth from both teams because of an aging slash underperforming kind of core group of experienced players from both teams, but also just that kind of way of playing and the waiting for those moments of brilliance. Like, you know, if you take that your point about Lamine Yamal in isolation, like I completely agree with you. I think we started incredibly with him and then it kind of tailed off. I do think some of it probably was tiredness, but if we just take a slight step back and just analyze that sentence for a second, we were effectively relying on a kid to go and take a Clásico by the scruff of the neck. Now, the last time you could argue that happened was, what, the Messi hat-trick game, but no one expected that going in. That was a bit of a freak display by Messi, if I remember rightly at the time. You know, no one went into that Clásico thinking he'll be the difference maker, whereas we probably did feel that was going to be something important yesterday. And I think if you look at Barca in totality, this season, this game, again, my opinion is it's a good encapsulation of that. The best performers, none of which would have started the season with most of us saying they should have been our best players or most impactful players, with exception of, I thought defensively, I thought Kubasi, Koundé and Araujo played well. Mm-hmm. I thought Araujo was good without being spectacular, where he's had some really big classical performances, but, you know, there's not much to point out to see done wrong. Koundé, I thought, had a great game. And Kubasi minus one error, which I actually think, you know, you can take that back to Cancelo, who is someone we'll no doubt discuss. I thought he played well as well. But you've got a kid that not many of us had truly heard of, if we're honest. We might have read the name here and there. You've got two decent players there, one of which might be away, both of which might be away, depending on which papers you read. Then in midfield, I thought De Jong was good before he went off. Again, someone that is, you know, away by most people's accounts. If the club can help it, it sounds like the only person stopping, that's him, which is decent. And then I thought Lamine Yamal was largely the only bright spot up front, generally. But you're relying on moments of brilliance from kids. And it's bizarre. And then if you look at the Madrid team, you know, you take that midfield, and in my opinion, you look at it thinking, well, you need to get an entirely new midfield here, realistically. You've got one or two players that most people wouldn't have expected to be at the level they were. I thought Lucas was great. I thought he played really well. I thought, again, they're looking at Vinny Jr. for flashes of brilliance rather than it being a system for him or driven by him. Mm-hmm. Kind of give him the ball and hope he does something great. And then you're looking at Bellingham, who, again, people forget, but Bellingham's a very, very, very young man still.
Yeah.
And you're kind of saying to him, okay, go and drive this Clásico forward. So I think both clubs have got serious questions around their kind of old guard. But I've got incredibly bright futures with their youngsters. And I think next season, it's who blinks first in terms of filling those gaps. Right now, yeah. I've got no faith that we have a plan for that because we don't even know who's going to lead us.
No. I mean, I we've discussed this before. Real Madrid's set up. The interesting thing with their young players, I feel like Real Madrid has a confidence that maybe is instilled by having a manager that they know has been there, that gives them that confidence, that allows them to play, you know, Real Madrid feels like one of those teams that has an identity, but also plays fluidly and adjusts very well in game. When things are happening, they move around, they make adjustments, things like that. Whereas Xavi stuck to a system. And, you know, I've said this multiple times in the past. Take out the name of the player, take out this, that, and the other. Xavi's system works best when there is a winger that will constantly attack and will be the almost the only point of offense while everybody else is kind of set up to defend and then be there when that winger gets the ball around, right? So on any given game where your wingers are not just attacking, 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 your game plan falls to shit, essentially. So Lamine Yamal's arrival realistically saved Xavi's season in ways that I think if you look at it when the end of the season comes and we look at all the games, you take out Lamine Yamal, and I think this season looks – I think Xavi leaves much earlier. Like, I think he ends up having to leave before the season's out.
Yeah.
Rafinha, the way he played in the first leg of PSG, you're looking at him and going, come on, dude. Like, you can do it. What's happening? Why are you not doing that? Like, why is it a 16-year-old the one that's doing this, right? Like, that's actually taking on defenders, taking the game by the scruff of his neck, that kind of thing. But you take out Lamine, you take out his age, you put anybody else in there, Xavi needs a winger. It's been the right wing for the last couple of years, but he needs somebody that will consistently attack because his game plan is so much based on control and keeping the ball and moving it side to side and back and forth and all that, that it doesn't work if there isn't one person that's just like going to just keep going forward, forward, forward. So like, I totally hear you on relying on kids, but with Real, it just feels different. A lot of those kids feel, I mean, Jude Bellingham, he's young, but that dude is there's young, and then there's like Lamine Yamal and Kubarsi, right? Like Kubarsi and Lamine are 16, 17. They feel like younger players. Bellingham is like, what, 20, 21? But he feels like
21, yeah.
Yeah, he feels like he's been doing it for years, which he has largely, right? He was in England, then went to Dortmund. Like, he's on the scene almost as a seasoned vet in a way that Lamine and Kubarsi aren't. And for them to be at the level they're at is incredible for their age. For them to have, I mean, I was really surprised at how much Lamine Yamal really took on Kamavinga. I rate Kamavinga highly, and I've seen him play in against like in international games and all these things. And for him to be done like that by a child, you know, that says how good Yamal is. But again, you look at Real Madrid's young players and you're just like, Rodrigo, like these guys are seasoned vets playing on a team of that level, of that caliber, of that badge, and they're still doing as well as they are. There's a confidence with that team that I think we could have gone up by three and they would have always believed that they could come back and win it.
Yeah, and I think some of that's endemic in them as a club, right? We've had this chat multiple times across multiple different presenters on this podcast that, you know, if football is about just winning, just support Real Madrid, because that just seems to be what they do. They just win from bizarre positions. Does it matter how they do it? Not really. They're a club that value the prize rather than the journey, probably more than a lot of our fans do. We can debate the merits of that forever if we needed to. But I definitely agree. And I think there's two important points that you raised more than any of the others, which is definitely Ancelotti. I think it goes really under the radar how you've got someone that you can look to, that real talisman, that figurehead who will put rockets up people's arses but will stay calm. Whereas I think we've just kind of gone too far with the Xavi thing. He's become a bit of a caricature of himself. Seen more of that yesterday. You know, it's that he was being praised in the commentary I was watching for not being yellow carded yet. Like, come on, it should be the exception, not the rule. Weird. And also, you know, as you've said, Ancelotti is very much a man who will let the system be dictated by the game in lots of occasions, but not all the time. You know, there is a core strategy there. It's about power, it's about pressing, it's about these types of things, but at the same time it could be fluid, you know, not quite as kind of systemless as Zidane was, but certainly less so than than certainly we are. But I think, yeah, that manager is important. And I think whatever we do next has to be dictated by something slightly bigger than just names. We've had this chat before, you know, like Xavi the player, Xavi the manager, like they are obviously very separate things. And it just isn't, I just don't think it's working anymore. But the other thing is just about kind of that youth element. And you've said Bellingham's been doing it for years, which he has. Some of their young players have also, you know, they're quite seasoned. The one thing I would say to kind of temper my, because I'm not negative at all, and it might be coming across that way, is the one thing I would say to temper that is the core of Barca's youth, if they progress the way they are, including the players that are missing, Xavi and Balde, especially if we can get Pedri back to some degree of fitness. Fermin, the impact he's had this season, I think will go under the radar, but shouldn't. You know, we've got these players who, there's a core group there that if you can build around them, I think could become a very, very good side. But I think they're being failed by some of the old players around them. For me, Gundogan compared to the person that he was in the Premier League is embarrassing. It's, you know, and I don't even think that's too far of a stretch to say that. You know, if he doesn't come by the mechanism he does, I think there's some horrendously big questions being asked about him. Lewandowski is what he is. I've been a big supporter of him, but you know, he's a nine who is waning. I think that's fair. And I think, you know, if I'm him, I'm probably looking at going sailing off into the sunset somewhere I can score a million goals, probably quite literally into the sunset as well. Cancelo is an embarrassment, a joke. Shouldn't be anywhere near the squad. Just cut it now. And then one or two other players probably haven't performed. But I think at its core, I think the future is very, very bright for us. I think, you know, we've got a keeper that you can bet your house on in Ter Stegen. I think you've got the core of a really solid defence there. I think you've got a decent young midfield if you can put one or two pieces in. And up front, I think there's a bit of a challenge that you've got to back some players and hope they come good. But you know, who would you rather have? Would you rather have Mark Guy up front and try him, or someone like a Hosselu? I know which one I would rather have. I'd back the youth every time. But I think you have to start with that intention. The big thing that's happening at the minute, and there was a debate in our WhatsApp group about this kind of, I think it was through the night, around, you know, what Laporta's thinking and what he will do. And you know, obviously, by the nature of the man, none of us know what he's thinking. The guy's an enigma at the best of times. But, you know, if you're going to go with youth, do it. Kind of what Pique said. If you're going to do that next season, do it, because you've got the real core squad there that can go and take that identity and run with it. If you're not going to back the youth, then you're going to have to sign better players than João Felix and João Cancelo. So, you know, stop trying to ride two horses with one arse and actually stick to one of them. And for me, I'd rather we went and really allowed those young players the chance to grow and develop, like players like Rodrigo, like players like Vinny have had. People remember Rodrigo's start at Madrid was awful. He got panned left, right and centre. It's coming good now. You know, the stick that Vinny's got, forget the awful situation he's had in almost every stadium, including ours, by the way, which is a disgrace. Forget the awful situation Vinny's had. Just look at how he was at first and the perception of him. Sure, pony, can't do it. You know, he's just a charade, circus act. All of a sudden, you give him time, he's coming good. Is he annoying? Yes. Will he get himself into a bother with his mouth? Yes. Is he fundamentally a player that can be really good for him for years? Yeah, give him a chance. And so, you know, that was my overriding take, is that you've gone of being competitive in a Clásico with a lot of kids and players you know are dross. Go and do a bit more of the youthful thing. And the future could be very, very bright, but you're going to have to find an agenda and stick to it rather than this weird middle ground we've got now.
Absolutely. And I think, you know, the point you were making about the Ancelotti, like, I mean, even Florentino Perez, like, Real Madrid is a solid foundation. They, regardless of how they've done it, regardless of what you think, what you believe. Yeah. Like, they are solid. They are solid. They have they have a plan. They have the people to look to. Those players aren't worrying about what Florentino Perez is going to do next week. They're not worrying about who's coming in, why they're coming in, who's going to play, when they're going to play. They're not worried about that stuff. They know Ancelotti's going to put the team that needs to be out there. They know if somebody's hurt, they're going to move things around. Like, they believe in all that. And I think we're not there. The players are still worrying about what's Laporta going to do? Who's he going to bring in? You're talking about the Gundogan situation. Like, yeah, if you're going to be getting these players that are coming towards the end of their career to be good here for 2 years, like, and they're not set up in a position to really do that. I think part of it for Lewandowski and Gundogan is that they're really not set up to succeed based on Xavi's system. So it's not a full, I'm not taking any blame off of them, but you're right. Gundogan has been woeful compared to who he was last year. Mm-hmm. Lewandowski is clearly waning in ways that are, we're seeing it faster and faster. Regardless of how the system is set up to help them or not help them, it's just getting worse. And they are players that when it's not working, even just between the two of them, when the system isn't working, Gundogan should be like, you know what? I'm going to dictate how this works. I am going to change things around, move things around, and I'm going to figure it out. Again, I don't think Kubarsi coming in, hitting those long balls were Xavi's instructions to him. I think Kubarsi is a player that was like, oh, Firmino's running? Yeah, I'm going to put that over the top because he's there and nobody's seeing it, right?
Yeah.
So why Gundogan is hitting passes back in situations where he's in an advanced position and hitting a bad pass backwards that gets stolen, like why something like that's happening? That's crazy, right? Gundogan shouldn't be doing that.
No. And I think this is the reality of where we kind of allowed ourselves to get to financially, which we've discussed this ad nauseum. So let's not do that again. But you know, you've rolled the dice on these players, and it just hasn't really worked for many of them. I think, you know, I think overall Lewandowski's contribution has been solid. You know, he's, what is he now, sixth top scorer in the league. He was is he sixth, fifth, fourth, fifth, sixth? He's up there anyway.
He's up there.
And Pichichi last season, some of his hold up play is great, some of his finishing is awful. But it is what it is. Overall, he's been decent. I think a lot of the other gambles that we've taken, they're just not working. Like Cancelo yesterday was at fault for all three goals. He gets beaten too easy for the penalty. Kubarsi probably could do better. He's 16. It is what it is. Yeah, you don't need to like that.
That's something we can grow with. That
100%.
If Kubarsi had made that mistake without Cancelo being the contributing factor, that's something we all go, you know what? He'll learn from that. He's not going to make that mistake again next year.
Exactly. It's an error, but it is what it is. It is what it is. It was a penalty. It is what it is. Cancelo gets beat embarrassingly. So I don't like it's just too easy. I know it's a football cliche, but it's too easy. He's at fault for the first goal. He's at fault for the second goal. And he's at fault for the third goal.
The third one was egregious. That was the way. Actually, no, that was the Bellingham one. The one where, I mean, I think he did this on both, but the one where he was just like, just not there. I think with the second one,
the second one, he lets a runner off his shoulder, which unforgivable. Yeah. Just exactly the same as midweek in Paris, and it's not good. It's not good at all. The third one, however, I would argue is worse because he's faced the player up and makes no attempt to tackle. Lets him put across without even trying. Like, if you go and watch, now I'm not sorry if this becomes a very British reference, but if you go down the park and watch any pub league football on a Sunday, I guarantee every single time someone's got the ball wide, you will hear a shout of stop the cross, stop the cross, stop the cross, stop the cross, just ad infinitum. Now, if people are doing that playing for the dog and duck on a Sunday, paying £3 a week for the privilege and, you know, cleaning up dog shit off the pitch before they can start a game, then I'm sure professional footballers are being told it as well. Stop the cross. To not even try and stop a cross, I just can't comprehend it. And so you're looking at him thinking, like, how and why should this continue? And if you're sat in a boardroom somewhere discussing the future of the club, and you're looking at someone like Fermín López who comes in and gives you a million out of 10 in terms of effort every game, if you're looking at what Xavi's contributed from La Masia, if you look at how Kubarsi's slotted in, now will there be duds in there? Absolutely. For every Lamine Yamal, there's a Dongao where we all go, that was awful. And he ends up playing, I don't even know where he is. He ends up playing somewhere. Probably still playing professional football somewhere. Apologies, I don't know where he is. But that's part of my point. For every one of those, there'll be another one. But financially, commercially, reputationally, stylistically, I'd rather, someone put it, it might even be yourself, someone put it in the chat yesterday, I'd rather lose with those kids than lose with someone like João Cancelo. And you're so, like, bang on.
I think I said that. And it was funny because it reminded me, I had a high school soccer coach. And this, my senior year, we'd had a great start to the season. And we started losing games in one game. It was like 2-1 or something. It was something ridiculous. We weren't losing by a lot. and he just subs out all the seniors except me and one other person. And his whole thing was, I'm not going to lose with seniors. And yeah. I remember at that time being like, that's one of the dumbest things I've ever, I was like, I don't understand it. We end up losing that game like 5-2 or something. And I was like, I don't understand this. Like, why would you have not even given us a chance? Watching that game yesterday, I was like, I'd rather lose with La Masia mm-hmm. children than lose with Cancelo just doing that.
Like, yeah, but 100%. But, you know, if to kind of, again, I'm not saying you're being negative, but to kind of spin the point a little bit. But if you give it time to bed in and develop, it doesn't have to be losing with kids. You know, it's not a binary choice. I know that's not what you were saying, yeah. but it's not a binary choice. Like, we can see from some of the kids Madrid have developed and us that if you commit to that properly, it can work. Like, Madrid's weakest part, bar none, yesterday was their midfield. Looked leggy, looked old, mm-hmm. simultaneously decent on the ball, but doing absolutely nothing with it and just leaving weird spaces. Like, they're done. Like, yeah. you know, two of the greatest of the last 25 years, I'd argue, in those positions, but they're finished. Modric and Cruz, just move yeah. them on. But so, you know, eventually you hit a point where you need to recycle. But I look at it and think, if you commit to this, my big challenge, and I've said it a few times this season, just because of how vocal I was about it last season, my big challenge about not playing kids last season was the expectation had been set that you have to win and it's not fair on kids to throw them in, seven That's games it. To go, and say, don't make a mistake. But there is a really clear marker that we can set down next season by coming out and just being very public about what we're going to do. We're going to promote Mark Hughes to the forward line. I don't even know if he's that good, but make a statement about it and see where we are. If you think he's decent enough to be in the squad every week, give him a chance. Like, see You're where he is, at least try him.
Peter Roque's there. We haven't even given that kid a try. Like,
that's a great shout, to be fair. I can't believe I forgot about him yet. But yeah, I mean, again, to a go young to kid.
We bought somebody to do this, and we
that's
haven't
embarrassing
even played
for
him.
Me. Yeah, that's embarrassing for me, but maybe it's indicative of where we are. But that's it. You know, you've got this core group. Go and back them. Go and publicly say, this season we are committing to this. It's what PK said, and it's not rocket yeah. science. PK is a politician. It was probably said with an element of an agenda, because I think he is loosely, you know, getting himself in position eventually to go and do something. Mm-hmm. And, you know, if I'm him, I very clearly run on a La Masia but different ticket. You know, it's the continuity yeah. change candidate, that classic cliche. Yeah. But I think the point absolutely stands, which is go and give these kids a chance. If you look at where the youth are and what we need, obviously there isn't enough of them, so you've got to reinforce it. But if you're going out to buy an absolute gem and back the rest in kids, find a six from somewhere. Easier said than done. Totally understand that. I get it. If we've got 30 million this year, go and buy a six with as much of that as you need to spend and put the kids around it, because yeah. we're not missing much to be competitive. And if we yeah. can be competitive while we grow, that's strategic. You know, would you write a season off finishing second or third to go and let these kids get a year worth of experience? I certainly would, as long as I know what we're doing. Don't tell me we're going to win the Champions League and La Liga and then play kids. Don't piss yeah. in my pocket and tell me it's raining, but commit to it and grow. Because as we saw from this season, as we saw from yesterday, there is a core group of kids there that can take the club on, but you've got to commit to it. Don't yeah. try and ride these two horses, like I said before.
I mean, and that's one of the main reasons why I'm getting closer and closer to a Rafa Marquez, because I think if you back the kids, he's been managing the majority of them. You keep that yeah. continuity. He's been doing well at Barca Athletic. And you know, people are like, oh, it's kind of the Xavi situation, didn't have the experience. But Pep, coach Barca B, came up, became Pep, right? Like, Pep didn't, as far as I'm concerned, and I know of Pep's career, it wasn't he went somewhere else, coached a bunch of teams, and then came back and coached Barca B. No, he was – I'm not saying you're going to replicate that with Rafa Marquez. But if you are going to focus on the kids, which is what you should do, fully agree, having a manager that worked with them most, a lot of them, if they're going to be our core group, having the La Masia Barca B manager who's doing well, who knows them well, who seems to have some level of a style of play come up, I don't think that's a bad idea. It saves you some money. It does all the things you need it to do. In terms of getting that six, like, fully agree. Again, I think where I would be at this point is, if you're going to buy a big name, don't do it. Just don't. We don't need a big wage bill. We don't need a big name. You don't need to sell jerseys for me. If, as you said, like, if you come on and say, hey,
Do we not know? Sorry to interrupt you there, but is this not part of the issue? Is that we probably do financially need to sell shirts? But the question is, what's going to get people more excited generally? Someone like Lamine Yamal or João Félix?
Well, so that's what I mean, right? What I mean about selling jerseys is, I think the general strategy behind selling jerseys, get a big name player that people know, everybody wants that jersey, Lewandowski's jersey, right? Like, get like I feel like for some of these signings, it's not about will they actually be good for the team long term. It's how many jerseys can they sell tomorrow, right? And what you're saying is right, because there are going to be far more people going, I want a Lamine Yamal jersey. That kid came out of nowhere and is baller. I want a Cubarsí jersey. He reminds me of a Puyol and, you know, an Abidal. Like, you can, if you, marketing-wise, you can start spinning these narratives however ways you want. You don't need to put all the pressure on the kids, but at the end of the day, you can get people to buy a Cubarsí jersey, a Lamal jersey, a Fermín López jersey, right? You could do that. It's not hard if you have other parts of your structure that are settled. We've been talking for decades about how good La Masia is, how much we trust them. At this point in our history, where we are, this is when we need to focus on them most.
100%.
And a lot of those kids, they will say, you know what? I love the badge. I'm here. Like, I don't, for every Elias Moriba situation, I think you have more that are like, I'm actually dedicated to bringing Barca back to the name that we have. You have a lot of things with this badge. One of them is history. And I think you have a lot of these kids that will go, yes, I could go somewhere else and make a lot of money now, but I love Barcelona. I love this badge and I want it to be better. I think you keep those kids around by having a structure around them that helps them be the best version of themselves and play their best football. Whether that's Rafa Márquez or somebody else, it doesn't really matter. But right now, what's most important is setting them up next year for the best version of themselves. And that means getting a new manager in, having the right physios in to make sure they're not hurt, getting players around them that can deputize for them so that they're not playing 1,000 games. And honestly, even cutting down some of the games that you're playing, like some of the travel that you don't need to be doing. Yes, we're trying to make money this and the other, but make that work for you. Make it come to Barca. You know, there's things that you need to do to make sure you set these kids up for success that we need to do. And they will stay and they will help us get back in 2 to 3 years back to where we need to be. But if keep doing the two horses thing, as you said, we're never going to progress and or be competitive. We're going to be sitting here 10 years from now having the same conversation. Well, which one are we going to do? We're going to get more. It's a cycle that we need to stop now.
I don't disagree with anything you've said, but it's just that final little thing you've said there, which is, you know, we'll get back to being competitive again. The weird thing is that we are competitive still. Just we're competitive despite ourselves. So this season, for me, no trophies, fair enough. It's still an achievement. We're probably going to finish second. We'll certainly finish no lower than third. We got further in the Champions League than we have for a while. We've got some kids through. Objectively, for me, this season is a success still. Success can mean many things. This football is a perpetual game. Like, if you live and die just by trophies every season as a fan, you're just going to annoy yourself. You're going to upset yourself. But, you know, if you look at the progress of the club, you know, it comes in cycles, it comes in waves, whatever. There's very few clubs that are perpetually brilliant. You know, people are very quick to forget things like Madrid under Benitez, where it all went to shit. Mm-hmm. You know, there's cycles in every club. This season is still a success. I think we've performed better than we could have been expected to have performed in times, especially when you look at the long-term injuries that we have with people like Balde and Gavi and De Jong in and out the squad, Pedri in and out the squad, Ter Stegen out for ages. So I think, you know, I think we've still been super competitive despite it. And I just think let's just go and commit to it. But I just think in terms of the game, sorry, there's a couple of things I just want us to discuss, if that's all right. And
I was going to get back to the game too.
The multitude of penalties and the disallowed goal, I don't think we can leave without discussing them, because that's probably what's on everyone's lips. And the goal, especially for me, is the only polemica from this yesterday. And, you know, I'll set my stall out. I made it very clear in the WhatsApp group. To me, it's impossible to tell whether that's a goal or not. Impossible. We might think we've got angles, but as we saw from the, I think it was Arsenal, was it Arsenal, Newcastle, or Man United, Newcastle, like, and Gary Neville ended up doing an article around how, you know, until you get goal line technology or any kind of perfect view down the line, angles can be deceiving because it's spherical. It's a spherical object. So, you know, by definition, you have parts of the ball that appear on the line where they aren't and vice versa. It is impossible to tell whether that is 100% a goal or 100% not a goal. It's all opinions, conjecture. It's based on angles that are awful. To me, that's not a disgrace. It's not a disgrace. The goal wasn't given. Everyone's guessing. However, the fact that La Liga, and I know you share this opinion, the fact that La Liga does not have goal line technology is, after its stance on racism, the most embarrassing thing about that entire league. What a disgrace in this day and age that we don't have that technology. And for it to happen twice in one day, come on.
Yeah. I mean, I hear you. Taking the measured approach is completely right. I have seen some angles that make it feel like no angle's going to be perfect. You know, having a top-down view, which we didn't have, that would have been good. But I've seen an angle from where the shot was taken, and the ball in all different ways looks over. Again, I totally hear you. Obviously, the not having goal-line technology is stupid, and it almost – I am not a conspiracy theorist. I tend to try to stay out of the Barca is being
cheated. Go on, I'm excited for this.
Yeah, like I tend to try to stay out of the Barca's being cheated, like, conversations, because it's just hard to really prove that in certain situations. But this was one of those times where it just felt like we're just watching a team that consistently gets good calls for them, get good calls for them in front of our faces in ways it just felt. I don't think that's why we lost the game fully. I think we had a bunch of different things with that, but like that call, and then you follow it up with Lamine Yamal getting into the box. The first touch, so Kamavinga doesn't hit ball, and you can argue that he didn't really, but like if you look at his back foot, Kamavinga's back foot hits Lamal in the back of his foot. Like, I feel like if that were on the other side, if that was Rodrigo, there's a part of me that feels like they call that a penalty. And I think that's the thing that's problematic about it, right? Like, I'm not saying that's why we lost. I'm not even trying to harp on it. And I think that we've done a great job of not making that the core of the conversation today, because it really isn't. Like, this team has bigger issues than one bad call against Real Madrid. But it does feel, when you're watching these games, especially against Real Madrid, if everything were flipped, there's just a part of me that feels very strongly that if that were a Real situation, that goal gets called. If that were a Real potential penalty, that penalty gets called.
I level with you. I don't see it that way at all. Which is fine, right? And this is kind of my point, really, which is I don't think that was a penalty. But I do think the one where Rudiger checks someone, can't remember who.
Oh, yeah. That was the other one. Yeah.
To me, that is right. But my point is, but they're debatable decisions, right? There's a hell of a lot of football that comes down to opinion, perception, angles, blah, 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 blah. I think the Rudiger one was a penalty. I don't think the other one was a penalty. I think the Lucas Vazquez one clearly was a penalty. And we can carry on.
Yeah.
My problem with the goal line technology one is the fact that, so I don't think Madrid would have got that as a goal, because I think the fact of the matter is, in my opinion, that unless you can say 100% a goal, you can't give it. But my point is, football being debated is fine. Like, I don't believe there's any conspiracies at all. I don't believe that's kind of where we are. Not on the pitch. Are there some away from the pitch with things like how FFP is interpreted? I think conspiracy is too far, but I think certainly there's certain clubs who have to try that a little bit harder. Some of that's because of our own actions, right?
Yeah.
You know, there are certain clubs who have only got themselves to blame. Some of the clubs are being potentially dealt with by history. But on the pitch, I don't think there's any conspiracy at play at all. But what I think is, things that are debatable should be debated. But goal line technology removes the only non-debatable thing in the world. The ball either crosses the line or it doesn't. There is no gray area. There is no opinion. It does or it doesn't. And in every other big league in the world, and some shitty leagues, that is not a decision that anyone has to make. It just is or it just isn't. The fact that we don't have that is wild, by the way. And then, you know, the penalty things, we can debate them forever. And that's fine. It's part of the fun of football. But I just felt that was a genuine stain on Spanish football yesterday. You know, you're arguing that that's your flagship marquee event, yeah. and you can't get that bit right. What a joke!
No, absolutely. And as I said, I fully agree with you. It's waking up this morning. I wasn't. For me, like, I've seen more angles of the goal and it's annoying, but I get overall, I'm not looking at that, at this game and the things that weren't called as, oh, that would have saved our season. I mean, we're still 8 points behind. What, we get 5 points behind and Real keeps winning, they still win the league, right? So it's not, there isn't a situation where it was like, oh, this game, had we gotten that call, we definitely would have gone and won it. Don't believe that. You know, it also wasn't, if we had won it, we definitely would have come back and won the league. Don't believe that. Like, the things of this season that are issues have been issues before this goal was not given, and they will be after if we don't fix them. Mm-hmm. So I didn't wake up this morning being like, oh my God, that would have changed everything. I think when you're in the heat of the moment and because of how big this rivalry is and how important these games are, you tend to feel and emote in the moment, especially when you're with a bunch of people who are also feeling and emoting.
Yeah.
But overall, it is absolutely absurd that La Liga does not have goal line technology. It's really not that expensive. I was watching somebody saying, like, the license from FIFA is only 3.5 million. And then, like, the equipment doesn't cost that. The equipment costs less than that. Like, 3.5 million is the top that you're going to pay for this. And then the rest of it is equipment. You're not going to tell me that Tebas does not have 3.5 million. Like, you're not going to tell me that the Clasico wouldn't generate that kind of money. Like, so it is. It's a stain. It makes La Liga look backwards in a lot of ways. And it's just, you can't keep pushing this as like, oh, this league is one of the best in the world. If there are going to be questions like this, like, we've invented goal line technology so that this was never going to be an issue again. So,
yeah. Yeah. It's just nonsense, really, isn't it? It's just, you know, I'm fairly sure that the Scottish Cup has goal line technology. And obviously it's, I love and adore that competition, but, you know, there's levels to this. And so I think that was the thing for me, which is, you know, a lot of decisions that were debatable, and that's good, but that one is just wild, just absolutely wild. And I think the reaction to it has been understandable in many ways. People are angry about it. And I think a lot of people are jumping to conclusions, right? You know, you said, you know, I'm certainly not coming at you here, right? But you said, I've seen some angles. You've also seen some that are like, maybe not, right? And this inherently is the problem. And again, it's the same with the penalties. Some, you know, you can debate it, but I think, you know, in a game of that magnitude, it was a bit of a shame that overshadowed it, because I think actually there was a lot of good football. There wasn't that much mobile. There wasn't that much kind of ugly scenes that we've seen in some Clásicos. I think it was played in a really good spirit, actually. I think, you know, other than Vinny being a bit of a weirdo to Koundé and Koundé reacting, which is understandable. You know, beyond that, I think it was actually quite good-natured but still competitive as a derby. So I just thought that was a real shame. And the only other thing for me that I wanted to touch on was just a small thing, but just Ferran's run for our second goal, just beautiful. Like, I don't know. I really want him to come good. You know, I really want him to really kick on. And whenever it looks like he's about to go and go on a bit of a run and he's done a few bits and bobs, he just fades away. And I don't know what I would do with Ferran. You know, I really want him to be great. I really want him to be good. And with movement like that, and we've seen some finishing over the season that makes him look like he's exactly the person you want. And then he just has games where he does nothing. And I just don't know. Big moment in a big game. I just don't know if he's a big game player, though, at large. What do you think?
So one of the things I'll touch on is, you said, like, played in a good nature. One of the things I really did like seeing yesterday, Araujo and Vinny, I think Araujo, like, kind of took him out on the sideline somewhere. It wasn't like a real takeout, but they both got up, pulled each other up, and, you know, it was very, very good natured. I really liked seeing that. In terms of Ferran, two years ago, I was not his biggest fan. I thought they gave him way more minutes than he deserved. He was not showing that he deserved to be playing as much as he was playing. And I just felt there was a bit of nepotism in certain situations with Ferran. Even, I mean, you look at the Spanish national team, like Luis Enrique was literally like, yes, he's dating my daughter. Like, I need to play him kind of thing, you know? But this season, I think it was towards the end of last season, started this season, he started playing well, started doing some things, and you're happy for it. He's a player of ours, so you want him to play well, right? Mm-hmm. He doesn't see he's not super fast, but he's fast enough. He clearly can score when he's put in the right positions. My thing with Ferran has been something that I feel like I've kind of thought about a lot of different times. It's this role of like somebody that plays under the striker that comes in, especially if you're playing with Lewandowski, like a player that does that can hold up. Having somebody
the Fabregas that, role.
Yeah, exactly. And that for me feels like Ferran could occupy that in later parts of the game, right? Not for the whole time, because I feel like Fabregas was a better passer and creator. But for somebody that comes in under the striker and can make a run, get the pass, and probably just slot one in, like that feels like a thing that he could occupy better. I don't him on the wing. I feel like I've seen few great games from him playing on the wing. Mm-hmm. Obviously, he plays better when he cuts in. He's not a cut out and then pass across it. And he's a cut in and tries to take a shot kind of person, right? So,
well, and that's it. Sorry, you know, that's it. Like, where is he? I mean, if you go back to his Valencia days, and I think his City days you can write off a little bit, but if you go back to his Valencia days, he was never a prolific goal scorer. He's not a winger. But so I think you're right. He's that kind of... that almost that kind of false nine type role. And does that work if you've got a focal point like Lewandowski? Is that better with someone maybe like a Vita Roque, who Christ knows how he plays? You know, we've had this chat before. Like, none of us have seen him enough to know what he does in a Barca shirt, which is a problem in its own right, and not one of his making potentially. But, you know, so what do you do with him? Because you don't play Ferran over Lamine Yamal or Rafinha. Mm-hmm. Then if Ansu Fati comes back, you put another blocker in his way. You don't play him over Lewandowski, probably. Well, Xavi doesn't, certainly. So I don't know what you do with him, but I just would like to really see him come well. But, you know, that's kind of my final thought is, you know, you look at all these players with massive futures, Kubasi, Lamine Yamal, Gavi when he comes back, you know, got all these players that could go and do something big that we're all saying we're back. And you've got, you know, the players that are obvious that you'd get rid of them, Gundogan, Cancelo, João Felix, blah, blah, blah. Then you've got this little middle ground of like, what do you do with Ferran? What do you do with him? What do you do with one or two of these players? So, but yeah, I mean, as always, it's incredible to kind of debate it and discuss it. I think, you know, certainly in terms of Clásico defeats, it's one of the ones that hurts the least. As I said at the start of the show, I thought it was quite evocative of where both teams were. I thought it was a decent game. It was a good watch, probably a good watch if you're neutral. And in general, I'm neither happy nor sad with it, to be fair. I'm very, very much 5 out of 10.
Yeah, I mean, I think overall it's, you're right. Like, I feel less today than I did yesterday because I was surrounded by a lot of Barca fans and all those things. But it's just one of those where you're just like, ugh. Like, I don't know. I say I feel less, but it's still, there's still like a part of you that's just like, we could be better. That would have been nice. I'm starting to look at the next last couple of games of the season. If Vitor Roque needs to start. I think he needs to start and he needs to be getting a lot of playing time. But that's my final thought. Look, it's always great debating with you. Looking forward to seeing what the rest of the season brings us and the conversations we can have from that. But have a great rest of your day. And yeah, for Barca fans, Forza Barca, we will be back.
Keep the faith, eh?
Podcast Network.